Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back after a couple of years of a layoff, and I am back and ready to go with a bunch of amazing podcasts coming up. Once again, it is called Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And before we get to our great guest today, I want to remind people if they want more information on me, you can go to my website, www.markpattisonnfl.com. I've got a new book coming out called Finding Your Summit, ironically the same name as the podcast, and you can buy it there, or at least it will redirect you to Amazon where you can get that book. So I'd love a ratings and review to crank that up, but it is all about my epic Mount Everest journey, my time in the NFL playing college football, and doing a lot of things I did with this guy that we have on today's show. Okay, let's get going. I have got Jim Mora. He is now the new head coach of Colorado State University. Probably sounds a little bit odd to you since you've been hearing the name Jim Mora, head coach of UConn, back in Storrs, Connecticut, last 4 years. So let's start off by, first of all, Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. It's been a while since we've done this, but I'm excited to do it again with you and talk about things and where we stand and what's going on in the world.
You know, it's interesting because I've done 275 podcasts, which is a lot of podcasts. And people who don't do this, it's a lot of discipline and hard work. I took like a year and a half off just to kind of reset and have some of my priority on running Sports Illustrated and doing some other things. But the first podcast that I ever had, I went with a safe subject since I'd never done one before. And you were on episode number one. So now you will be on returning guest three or four times on episode 276, which is pretty cool. So I appreciate that. Okay, so you had after UCLA, there is a 4 or 5 year gap, and then you go back to UConn. And UConn was a hell of a challenge. They hadn't won in years. I want to get into detail because what this podcast is really about today is the leadership and what it took to turn around a program that was like as dead as could be dead. I think during COVID, they actually didn't even show up. They didn't play a season. And then you came in the last 2 years, went 9-3 this last year since I watched them. The three losses that you had were in overtime. So, I mean, it's what it could have, should have, but you know, you could have won those games too, and you could be sitting on a much larger number. But however you want to slice it, you had an amazing year. You've had an amazing run these last 4 years. So let's go back into when you came into this like walking dead atmosphere back in Storrs, Connecticut, what that was like and what you needed to do to change the culture, the environment, to shift into a winning mindset.
That's a great question, and it all starts with this, I think, is accepting that I love hard things. I love the challenge, just as you do, whether it's skinning up a hill or taking on a task professionally. And I was taking over a program that, as you mentioned, was on the cusp of really either dropping down to the FCS level, or a lot of people just wanted them to give up football. I believe they'd won six games in their previous 5 years. And so what seemed like an impossible task to many, and I got a lot of questions like, why are you doing this? It was just an exhilarating challenge to me because I love the hard. I want to lean into the hard. I want to embrace the hard because I think that's where we find ourselves and that's where we test ourselves. And it was certainly hard, but I can tell you that in 4 short years, we won a lot of games. We went to three bowl games. We produced the For the only time in over 120 years of that program, two back-to-back 9-win seasons. And if they win the bowl game, it'll be a 10-win season, which they've never had as an FBS program. So really proud of all the things we did. And then I felt it was just time to move on, and did that. But really enjoyed my time there. And we can talk about all the things that we did to change that place as we go through this podcast. But it all went back to one thing, Mark. Is accepting that I love hard things and not being afraid of the challenge, just very much like you live your life.
Yeah, I think that's one thing to do or say, and it's another thing to actually do. And I want to get down into kind of the grind of that because I think a lot of people in business, not everybody's a head football coach. There's only X amount. There's, in the Power Five, there's now it's Power Four really, but there's 64, teams, colleges that are out there, and then you add in. So I think you add up, the totals is like 104. you know,
134. Yeah.
134. Yeah. So there's only 134 of you, and there's loads and scores of different CEOs. And in the journey that I have been on with these different media companies and the organizations that I have been a part of, I can tell you that the biggest failure amongst these companies has been the leadership top down. How do you articulate what you're trying to achieve? How do you articulate what you want your people to do? And then how do you get them to actually execute that and deliver on the results that you need to get to the different, to a different level? You've been able to do that at UConn. And so I just wanted to say this for a second, because this is only on the outside. So I've been to stores a few times. I've been down to, you guys would actually play not too far away, but down in that stadium down in Hartford, you'd walk in, and even in the locker room, I think you changed a lot of the messaging just on the walls. And so that's like the minutia, because you're not actually saying something, you're just presenting some visual stimulation on what you expect. And so again, let's go back to, like, you have these guys are walking around players, and obviously there's a turnover of players. You had to go out and find better guys that could help, actually perform. But now you have to get them into your system. So how do you do that? How do you change, like, with the winning culture and getting them to believe? And that's so much of all the stuff is being an athlete. I was a former professional athlete, of getting out there and believing that what you say you can actually do.
So I think there's a lot to unpack there, and it's just great questions and great discussion. I think number one, I've done this before. We went to the Atlanta Falcons. They were 5-11, and we went 11-5 and went to the NFC Championship game our first year. Then we went to UCLA. They were 5-7, and we won 46 games, had two back-to-back 10-win seasons, won the Pac-12 South our first year. Then we went to UConn, as we already mentioned. They were down and out, and we lifted them back up. And I think when there's a common thread through all that, it's the people. It's the people that you hire, and it's them having high standards, being like-minded and yet being forward-thinking, and having people that you can trust. And then, Mark, I think it's this: it's after you pick the right people, and I'm talking about coaches and players. It's as a leader, is you have to set the direction. For the organization, you have to set the standards, the expectations, what you'll allow, what you won't allow. Really, the environment, or as the people will call it, the culture. And that's up to you to set the culture. And then everybody has to embrace the culture. And culture isn't what you'll ex just what you expect. It's also what you will or will not allow, because your culture will drop to the lowest common denominator. If you allow things that are contrary to what you say your culture wants to be, then you lose credibility. So we've always done a good job, I think, of maintaining the standard that we set, and not only maintaining it, but elevating it. And it's getting people to believe, and belief, I think, starts with trust. So every day I work really hard to make sure the people that I work with, or the coaches or the players that I get to coach, trust me, so that when I ask them to do something that's hard, they know that it's for the right reason. It's the reasons that are going to benefit the program and benefit themselves. And really, our messaging, you talked about messaging. Messaging has to promote the culture that you're trying to create. And you don't want too many messages, because the message can become convoluted. So I keep track, or I make a concerted effort to keep the message small. And I write that on my notebook every week before a game. I said, don't let the message get too big. Let's keep the main thing the main thing. And so for us, the main thing is actions over words. We're all gonna You have to define who you want to be, right? And define where you want to go, and define your culture. But it's putting those things into action that matter. It's not the words that matter, it's the actions, it's the habits that you create every single day that eventually lead to success or failure. It's what you accept, what you reject. Another one we use is discipline over feelings. Our feelings are going to come and go, but it's our discipline that's going to keep us on path. We talk about our DNA. Who are we? What are we going to be? And how are we going to be that every single day? Like, what are the actions we're going to take every day to make sure that we are becoming the very best we can be that day. And so we just kind of keep the messaging very tight. And you've been in our locker room and you've seen those things. You've seen the mindset. You're creating it all the time. You're the same message given in a different form is what hits with these kids and with these players or with these coaches. So I've been through my career able to go from a point where maybe my messaging was very wide based to very narrow, you know, and I've really learned through my career what type of people I want to be around, what type of people I can count on, what type of people can count on each other. I reject entitlement. You know, I don't want to be around people that are entitled, that believe that they just get something because they want it. I want to be around people that work every day to earn the opportunities that they get, you know? So those are some of the things that I think have really helped us. And then, you know, as the leader, Mark, you know, this is, you are the buck stops here guy, right? You are the absolute gatekeeper of your culture. You are the absolute gatekeeper of the standards. And you can never, ever, ever one time make an excuse for failure to adhere to those standards, or you give everybody else the key to make excuses as well. So we talk about, you know, excuses are just negotiating with our success. And it's hard, but you have to get up every day and you have to say, hey, I'm going to be the role model to 115 players and 43 staff members and all the fans. With everything I say, everything I do has to match the words that I'm putting out there. And so I work really hard at that. And I think it's helped us, you know, our players at UConn are tremendous. Well, they're not mine anymore, but they're the players at UConn that we had success with were just tremendous young men. You know, they didn't have entitlement. They wanted to work for it. You know, they sat there in meetings and they were bright eyed and they wrote down notes and we demanded that, you know, we demanded it. And we always tied it back into their lifetime success, not just their football success, but how are you going to be a successful person outside of football? How are you going to be a great father, a great husband, a great, you know, mentor to the next generation, a great leader of your own company? How are you going to max out your potential every single day? And for us, it came really back to those three principles: actions over words, discipline over feelings, and what is your DNA? You know, what are you made of and how do you reinforce it every day with the habits you create?
Yeah. So at Sports Illustrated, I used to call some of that what you're talking about. Well, first of all, how you do something is how you do everything, right?
Yeah.
And so that just bleeds down on all the things that you just talked about. How you do something is how you do everything. And that starts with waking up in the morning, putting my feet on the floor, and then walking out and attacking the day, making my bed, doing all these different things that the small things add up to the big things, right?
Sure.
Yeah. The second part is when you're talking about communication and kind of top down is brutal honesty. And one of the things that I always judge over at Sports Illustrated and the people that I ran over there is just effort. So if you're giving me all out effort and some everybody's effort's not the same. Everybody has a different ceiling. You know that. Cam Edwards, your running back, you know, has got a way higher ceiling than some of the, you know, the third or fourth guy on the depth chart of the running back position at UConn, right? It's just the way it is. But 100% effort will always beat 70% effort, no matter what the talent is.
And it's hard, right? It's hard because, so it's the same thing that you said about you get up every day. And I ask our players and coaches to do this, and I say it to them all the time, you get up to today, and your goal is to be the very best that you can be at everything that you do that day. That's your goal. That doesn't mean you're going to achieve it, but that's your goal. That's in your mind. And then you get up the next day and you try to be a little bit better. And that's the process, right? And you put that process into action every single day. As you said, those small things, they just start to stack and add up. And all of a sudden, you're achieving great things, and your mindset has changed, and your attitude has changed, and your goals have risen. And that's so important. And I also think this is, you know, as a leader, you make tremendous demands on the people that you lead. And, you know, in football, it's hard. It's really hard. And we are ultra demanding of these young men. And I believe that it's critically important that the support that we offer them, that I offer them, is equal to demands I'm going to make on them. I cannot make demands on these young men or these young ladies that work for me and not offer them the support to match the demands I'm making. And so every day I have to make that commitment as well. Give them support that they need to accomplish the things that I'm asking them to accomplish. And I think that's really imperative for a leader. You know, keep the message tight. support the demands you make, and be a great example every single day. And as you said, you get up in the morning and you just make a conscious decision. I'm going to be the best that I can be at everything that I do today. And it's okay to, like, I'll walk in front of the meeting and I'll tell those players that all the time. And I'll say, listen, that's hard. That's really hard. But hard things are hard. You and I use that all the time. You know, how do you handle hard better than the next person? You know, it's a commitment that you make, right? And not everybody has it, but I think everyone can grow it if they desire and they make the right commitment and create the right habits and sacrifice a little bit.
There's a lot of sacrifice that goes along the way, but that's what earns,
See, I don't like to use sacrifice. See, this is, I hate the word sacrifice in a team setting. We all make individual sacrifices, but I like to talk to these guys about, listen, it's not a sacrifice, because a sacrifice means you're giving something up. It's a commitment, because a commitment means you're going to get something. So I very rarely use the word sacrifice. I will substitute commitment for sacrifice as often as I can. Let's make the commitment. Let's not, it's, yeah, is there a sacrifice? Yeah, but let's make it a commitment. So we want to do it because we know there's a payoff at the end of the day. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think that's tied directly. And you and I have talked a lot about John Wooden's pyramid of success, and Don James took it over. But the very top of the rung is called competitive greatness, right? And so for me, and I think one of the reasons why I've been able to succeed in a lot of different things, and I think one of the reasons why you have been able to succeed at all these different stops you've been at, UCLA, the Falcons, UConn, other places, and as an assistant coach 25 years in the NFL, is because when you tie competitive greatness, what does that really mean? It means that you love the process. So if you absolutely love going out and working out or having an ice cream cone or eating a cookie or whatever, that, you know, if you love the process of that grind, then it does not become a sacrifice, because you're doing all the little things that then add up to these big pieces that ultimately, you know, shine through. And then you are sitting there at UConn this year, 9-3. They're I think today or tomorrow they're playing in the Fenway Bowl in Boston, something like that.
John Wooden, he said he defined competitive greatness as being at your best when your best is needed. Well, the only way you can be the best when your best is needed is going through the process, like you just said. The process. Every single day, the process and the habits that you create. Do your habits match your goals? Do they match your aspirations? Do they match your standards? If they don't, then you're fooling yourself.
Yeah, you know, I'm just tying that back really quickly to when I was at Camp 4, 26,500 on Mount Everest in 2021, on the 21st of May. And I was at my worst when my best was required to get to the top. But because I loved the process, I've been at it, a lot of that training with you. In 2000, world got shut down, so it got bumped to 2001 or 21. I was able to grind through it because I put the hard work into to just train my mind to do hard things, even though my body was failing. I ran out of oxygen. I was blind in one eye and things like that. So sometimes being at your best when your best is required, like I've had a lot of examples of that. You and I played together back in the day where I went through 3 or 4 years of hard times. And then I got my big break against Michigan, and I was in the right place at the right time. And that all paid off exactly the way that phrase goes. But sometimes it doesn't all. It could be like when you are being at your best when your best is required, but you guys are down, you know, 14 points going in the fourth quarter. And how are you going to overcome that?
The work that we did gave us the confidence to go and be successful in those moments. We were fantastic in 2-minute situations this year. We never felt like we were out of it because we'd done the work. We did, between the start of spring practice and our last game, we did over 800 2-minute drives, and we had to put together a 2-minute drive at the end of our last game to win it. And we did, and we did it with complete confidence. We went 15 plays in 100 minute 26 to score a touchdown to win the last game. Let me go back to you for a sec here, so people know. You talk about the process, okay? I remember being over at your place, and we, you know, we didn't watch a lot of TV, obviously, but we'd be sitting around watching TV, and you're preparing for Everest by standing up watching TV because you knew you were going to have to be on your feet for, you know, 12, 14 hours a day. And I go, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm preparing for Camp 4, basically." You know, we would go outside, and it would be, you know, 10 degrees, and you wouldn't have gloves on while we'd be skinning up the mountain. I go, well, why don't you have gloves on? Because my hands are going to be cold on Everest. Well, people that fail to succeed take the easy way out. They sit down to, and these are two just small examples. So they sit down and they watch TV, or they put gloves on when their hands get cold, or when they get to the top of Frenchman's, they say, okay, I've gone far enough. I'm going to turn around. Where you go, no, I'm going to the top every single time. And that's why when you were sitting there at Camp Four and you had to gather the strength to get to the top. And then not only that, as you said, when you're snowblind and you're coming down and then you run out of oxygen, well, you were prepared. And so you lived, and not only physically prepared, but mentally prepared. And that's what champions do, is they work the process. They commit to the habits. Like I've never in 40 years of being with you, you've never, when we've gone out and climbed, you've never turned around. You know, never turned around, never. And so that's why you're sitting here having a podcast today instead of having your body up there. Well, one of the reasons at Camp Four, you know. So it's a mental that creates the physical ability to do something. I really believe that. And I think that, you know, the correlation between what you did and what we've been able to do in football, it's just convincing yourself through the process and the commitment that you make and the standards that you live by and the habits that you form, that I have the confidence to overcome anything. And that's what John Wooden's talking about. My best is required right now, and I'm prepared to give it because of the work that I did.
Maybe we're saying the same thing, but I really believe that by pushing yourself to the physical ultimate limit, trains your mind then to overcome when hardship sets in. A great example of that is when you and I climbed, we were asked to co-climb with these other Navy SEAL guys up Mount Rainier. And one of the guys that came along was not a Navy SEAL. He was a guy that had read a lot of books, had not done any kind of physical training, had literally done zero. He was out of shape. He was overweight. He was everything you don't want to do when you're climbing with somebody else, which then puts, you know, other people in the climbing party in peril. And you know, I'm doing a keynote speech coming up in March, and one of the big themes is about reliability, right? And so when you have a lack of trust, there's a lack of reliability on your teammate or your team member. In that particular moment, we're going up through Disappointment Cleaver, a big rock outcrop, and you literally are right behind him, pushing him in the ass up. I'm in front, pulling him. Yeah, and he's puking, and you know, and set himself up in such a bad way to end up trashing our summit attempt and to piss both of us off. But you know, again, that's what it gets back to when you don't do the physical training so that when it gets hard things are hard, that then you can mentally push through, just like I had to do when I was just trying to get 10 more steps, step 10 more steps, right? I was my physical, my body was still strong, but my mind, like, I don't know what was worse, my body, but the bottom line is because I trained so hard, I was able to will myself in those ways. And that guy in that particular example on Mount Rainier about 6 years ago was a mess, and it trashed our trip, and he ended up having an awful experience and almost died up there.
And we had an awful experience because of it. And it's anytime you're in a team environment, it is imperative that everybody's in at the same level. You know what I mean? That everybody demonstrates the same commitment, because that's how you gain trust and reliability. Is you look at your teammate and you say, you know what, that guy right there, that person right there, they are in at the same level that I am. They're demonstrating it to me every day in the way that they work on the practice field, in the weight room, study and meetings, the way they eat, the way they sleep, their commitment. And when you have a group of people that are in at the same level, and they continue to push that level and push that standard, then you can have success. But one little crack, one little failure, one little person that doesn't get in at the same level can bring the whole thing down. And so as a leader, you talked about it earlier, having the hard conversations, right? Being able to tell somebody on your team, listen, you're letting the rest of the team down because your commitment level doesn't match everyone else's. So either you get it going or you're going to be replaced. And that's honesty. And you said it's brutal honesty, but it's imperative for the success of the team. And hopefully that person takes it as a challenge, accepts the challenge, rises to the challenge, But if they don't, you have to be, as a leader, ready to move on from that person. Now, you got to give them, you got to support them, you got to help them. But when it becomes evident that they're not going to be able to carry their load and get the team where they want to be, then you got to cut them loose. And to me, that's team ego. You know, it's team ego over individual ego. And that's another important component of team success, is team ego. You know, your ego needs to be subservient to that of the team. And you can see it in commitment levels that fall short, and you can also see it on the other end of the spectrum, where people put themselves above the team. And so it's making sure that there's cohesion on your team. And to me, it's always been the consistent messaging that I give every day, and the consistent demonstration I give every day to the teams that I coach. You know, and I know there's days that I fall short, but there's never been a day that I've woke up and said, ah, I'm going to take it easy today in terms of my professional life. There's never been a day that I was going to walk into the office and go, it's okay if I fall short today. You know, you walk in there, like we've said three times now, I'm going to be the freaking best I can be today for everyone that's depending on me and for myself. And that's what I'm going to do again tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And I'm going to bring people along with me. You know, lift while you rise.
Let me brag on you for just a second. So you've had 104 wins over the course of you being a head coach at both the NFL level and the collegiate level. You've got almost 600% winning percentage, which is amazing. I mean, really, anybody does that. When you win over 100, you have this amazing video. I'm not sure who put that together, but you know, Peyton Manning and Charles Barkley and all these other guys, and you've been able to rub shoulders with some elite athletes out there that respect what you do. Now you are landing at Fort Collins, even though you're broadcasting today from Sun Valley, Idaho. But you now are in this new environment in Fort Collins. And obviously, when the previous coach at Colorado State came in, he was saying all the same stuff, you know, leadership, and I'm sure a lot of the same things that are coming out of your mouth right now. But at the end of the day, it's the credibility of which the leader can actually deliver. And everybody delivers that message in a different way. And unfortunately for him, he is now gone, and you are the new guy that's in because, you know, of your success at UConn. So tell me what it's like when you are exiting a program and you have a lot of those coaches that are coaching today or tomorrow in the bowl game, and you now have gone on, you're the more or less the only guy that has gone on to Colorado State in Fort Collins, trying to figure out who you're going to retain, what players you want, what the environment is. And it's just not the assistant coaches do, it's the whole other support staff. And then you've got this whole thing called the portal, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's been a big part of your success, in that the, you know, number two backup tackle or whatever from Michigan or these other places that's not getting any PT, and especially with your 25-year NFL experience, you've been able to convince these guys, even though UConn didn't have all the resources in the world. So let's focus now on Colorado State. How do you do that? How does one build a program from, we'll call it scratch, where there's all this transition happening?
The people, you know, I'll go back to really the first thing I said, is picking the right people. So fortunately, I'm going to be able to bring about 20 of the people from Connecticut that I, you know, when I say they're my people, I don't mean they're mine, like I own, but they're people that I trust, people that I know share the same vision as I do, the same standards, the same work ethic, embrace the culture. So bringing them along will help. In the portal, you have an opportunity to go find some players. Well, there'll be some players from UConn that go in the portal that I hope find their way to Connecticut, because they can be a great example to the players that are at Colorado State of how we do things, why we were successful, because they will embody everything that I talk about every day. When I talk about, this is how we work, this is how we practice, this is how we study, this is how we take care of our body, this is, you know, how we recover. These guys have done it with me for 4 years, so they'll be bright, shining examples. And then it's, you know, when you bring new people into the fold, it's trying to get the most comprehensive idea of who they are as a person, as a coach, what's important to them. You know, I'm hiring people that I don't really know. It's connecting with people that I do know that have connections with the people that I'm trying to hire, and getting a real good feel for them. And I believe I have a good feel for that. You know, after doing this for so long, as you know, you just get a natural feel for what a good person and a good coach, a good connector looks like and sounds like. And I really feel good about the staff we're putting together. It's a little bit more difficult with some of the players that have been at Colorado State. You know, they were 2-10 last year. They had a lot of injuries. It's the first step for me was sitting down with 100 of them and having a conversation. I was sitting down with 40-something staff members and having a conversation, and trying to get a feel for the program and what went right and what went wrong. Because Jay Norvell, who was the head coach, is a damn good football coach. And he worked for my dad in Indianapolis. He's a family friend. I have a ton of respect for him. But somewhere along the line, besides the injury, something went wrong. And so I want to get a feel for that, but I'm never going to harp on it because I just have strong beliefs and a strong confidence in what we are going to do and what we are going to incorporate, that it doesn't matter to me what happened in the past, but I still want to have a feel for it, you know, and I want to understand really in talking to those players, like, what did they need? What do they need? What do they need to be successful? What can I give them? Or do they fit the personality, the type of man I want on our team? And if they don't, then you have to make changes. And if they do, you tell them flat out, I'm going to pour myself into an investment in you. Pour everything I got, I'm going to invest in you. And when you do that and you demonstrate it every day, that trust, that belief, right, it grows. And that bond, as you know, on a team has to be strong. Has to be strong. That's why I say every day, I work for these guys' trust. I work hard to gain their trust. So because I'm Mark, I am going to freaking be so demanding of them. Because as a 22-year-old, you don't know what your limits are, right? You don't know. You think you know, but you don't know. And you need someone to pull you or push you past your limits. And that's who I'm going to be. But I always tell them, I'm not doing this for my ego. I'm doing this to show you who you can be. Like, my ego's kind of dead. Like, I'm older. I'm doing what I want to do. I've been very fortunate. And now it's convincing these players through my actions that everything I do is for them, not for me. It's for them and for the team. And I think that if there was a superpower that I had, and I'm not saying I do, but if there was one superpower as a coach I have, it's connecting with players, getting them to trust me, and then earning that trust every day so I can be demanding as hell on them. And they love it. You know, I ask them, Mark, I ask them, tell me your goals. I want to know what your goals are. And then they tell me their goals, and I say, okay, my job is to hold you accountable to your goals every single day. So if I see you slipping from what your goals are, then I'm going to call you back. And as you mentioned, I've coached and worked with 54 members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I don't know that there's anyone that's done that has more associations than I do. Now that just means I've coached for a long time, but being around greatness, being around Ronnie Lott, you know, being around Morton Anderson, okay, two opposites of the spectrum, the greatest hitter of all time and the greatest kicker of all time. But they share very, very common traits, as you know, because you know them both very well. But I learned amazing lessons from being around those types of people that I can now apply in teaching these younger kids.
Yeah, really, with both those two guys, and I do know those guys, and I know a lot of those guys, and I play with a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, is the difference between willing and want, and the byproduct of the award is just it just a it resonates for what they wanted to know, what they're willing to do, right? Because everybody wants to be a millionaire, but what are you willing to do to show up every single day to that particular task to be, you know, to achieve at a high level, and then all the other stuff will take care of itself. But it's
It's
huge.
hard.
It's hard, but that's all, again, competitive grade. If you don't like what you're doing, you should get out and find something else, right?
The hard path, you and I know this, the hard path is the most rewarding path. You know, anyone can do easy. And these are things that everybody says, you know, but few are willing to make the commitment to live that way, you know. And you have to embrace the difficult because at the end of the difficult is the reward, you know, and then you go search out something more difficult. And I think for me, one of the reasons I was so excited about going to Colorado State, one of the reasons, there were several reasons, was I wanted another real challenge. I'm not done being challenged. You know, you weren't done being challenged this morning. You know, you've climbed Mount Everest. When you got done climbing Mount Everest, instead of sitting back and going, okay, I've accomplished everything, then you decided to take on all these other peaks around the world, right? And this morning at 6:15, you were going up Baldy, you know, and it was 7 degrees out. And to me, that's the attitude that champions have, is there's it's kind of like Nike's old slogan, right? There is no finish line.
No, I love it.
And you see, your book, Finding Your Summit, or your podcast. Well, and I think you say it all the time, there really is no summit. You know what I mean? You reach one, what you believe is your summit, and then you immediately say, okay, what's the next challenge for me? And that's how you grow as a person.
That's what keeps you getting up in the morning. And I know that's what keeps you, getting up every single morning and going after your craft, which you're so good at. So, at this point, we need to wrap it up. And I appreciate you coming on. I'm going to have you on again, and we're going to talk about how well you guys did at the end of your season of this next year, 2026, at Colorado State. You've been a great friend, a great ally, a great supporter of the show. And let's try to get another like 600 shows podcast going. And once
Yeah.
again, for anybody, you can find this on my website, www.markpattisonnfl. And my book, Finding Your Summit, is also coming out here in the beginning of January. So go check that out. And I appreciate any ratings and reviews. Jim, any last comments?
There is no summit, but go try to find it. And so, hey, the book is fantastic. I've gotten to sneak preview of it. I got to live a lot of those experiences that Mark's talking about. It's honest, it's genuine, it's inspiring, and I think everyone needs to read it. It'll add value to your life, and I'm sure it'll inspire you to just be a little bit better today than you were yesterday.
Love it. Great way to end. All right, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.